Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Sometimes bison wind up in places they shouldn't, and that can be more urgent than it first appears. SDPB's Kevin Wooster writes about it on his blog. You can find that blog at sdpb.org/Wooster. It's called On the Other Hand, and Kevin joins us today on the phone. Hey, Kevin, welcome back.
Hey, Lord, we haven't had enough bison talk yet, have we?
I'm not sure. Can we ever have enough bison talk, right? Because it's the season for rounding up.
Yeah. They round up all over the place.
They round up all, and this today it's wind. Sorry, go ahead.
Wind cave. Yeah. Wind cave, and as I say in the blog, much different, and that's been written before, but it always amazes me the difference in the roundup across the fence between Wind Cave and Custer Park, you know, between the festival that is the Buffalo Roundup, attracting thousands and thousands of people, and the quiet, business-like affair of the roundup on Wind Cave. So two different purposes, both have a management objective that's part of it, but more celebratory across the line in Custer Park.
Right. All right. So tell us a little bit about who showed up that shouldn't have at the Wind Cave Roundup.
Well, you could say I did, but I'm going to try not to believe they feel that way. I went down late, as I often do things these days, and all of the other reporters were gone, and I was with Tom Farrell, who I like to call the greatest public information officer in the National Park Service. Now, I don't know if everybody throughout the Park Service agrees with me on that, and there may be some I don't know, but he's chief of interpretation down there, which is a title. It's kind of like a PIO on steroids, and he takes great care of me. So I was up, we were up over in a kind of a crow's nest or an observation box above the corrals watching the, as they got started after a lunch break to run the buffalo through the chutes and look for chips that identify them, and if they didn't have them, put new chips in and get to information from them in blood and tail hairs and things like that, age them. And there was a kind of a commotion and a hurried actions down there. And I asked Tom what it was, and he checked around, and he came back up and said, yeah, there's a Custer State Park bison in the bunch, which is not supposed to happen. And it's worrisome because the genetic makeup of the Wind Cave herd is really, really special and free of cattle genes and really has a diversity of genetic materials that make it highly in demand by tribes and nature conservancy preserves and other operations that are trying to bring native, genetically pure or close to pure bison back to the landscape across North America.
Huh. So what do they do then? They have to act quickly, or is it not quite as urgent? I guess how quickly can the situation go wrong is what I'm trying to subtly ask.
They took out a large caliber rifle. No.
No.
I'm joking. No. They did not. They quickly isolated the bison, and they're in better. It was not as critical a situation as it is, as it might have been if it had been the rut, because that's a problem. You know, they obviously don't want any fraternizing in that way with the Custer State Park bison. So they got it separated there, and the Custer State Park folks were quick to get over there after that fact and picked up. And they've had other times when they would get in, and the two parks work together to quickly, you know, get that bison back where it belongs. So that was the big news for me when I got there. But there was also other news, including the fact that they're putting radio collars on cow elk or cow bison down there for the first time.
Huh.
To try and track their movement and see how they use habitat and maybe manage the habitat a little better that way.
So that's a big collar.
A big collar, I would think. And they're going to, the fun thing about it is when you go down there, you get to walk by the head of one of the animals, one of the bison that's being held in the chute. And I shot a little video with my cell camera as I walked by it, you know, and can reach out and touch it if you want to, although I didn't. And it's always just amazing to be that close to those animals and to see people working with them, and to see the difficult work they have to do, even with the containment system there, but also the really careful way that they handle them and make sure they're handled, you know, with respect and care. So it's always a good time down there. It happens every other year. So.
And it's not open to the public.
It is not. It's open to media because it's not a show, and they really ask that you, you know, that you, they're careful people in the way. They don't want the animals to get worked up. They want this to be as efficient and as low stress on them as possible. And so that it's an entirely different show. And the Tom Farrell and the guys at Wind Cave never puts down the big production across the fence, because that has different objectives, although there is a management objective too, where the Custer Park herd needs to be thinned, and those are then sold at the auction. But they just have a different way of going about it and a different mission. So,
yeah.
And again, I just love being around those bison that have that special genetic makeup. And you just feel like you're connected with something that's really ancient.
So how do they, you say that makes them in demand, for tribes and conservancies. How does that work? Do they give calves to other places? How do they sort of, manage what they're managing, but then also use it as being connected to other scientific needs?
Yeah, they go through this, and they run, they use their own. And again, unlike horses at Custer State Park, we have flags and cowboys and cowgirls and, special guest riders and everything, and the cameras are rolling. They use UTVs, and they get a helicopter operation to help out too from Wyoming that the park uses for other collecting and research duties in the park. And they bring it in, and they're looking for primarily yearlings and two-year-olds that haven't been checked before. And then they'll sort through they have about 550 bison in the park, and they try and keep that a little bit below that because of the available habitat and the size of the park and the bison range there. So they'll take about 120 of those out. And they're going to three tribes this year, and to three different tribes in Minnesota, and one the Flandreau tribe in eastern South Dakota, and Nature Conservancy preserves in four states.
Hmm.
And so they will be shipped out to them, and then the herd gets lowered more to where they want it for the available habitat and things. And it also sends these little satellite herds out across the country to, again, provide education for people and for the tribes, this cultural connection that goes back so far,
yeah.
And also to preserve those genetics. So if something were, God forbid, to happen to the herd in Wind Cave, they would have these little satellite herds out there that preserve that genetic base.
Wow. Tell me more about the radio collars, and you mentioned sort of looking at that habitat. Who paid for those collars, and what do we, what's the hope for what we can learn from the data that they collect?
Well, the Parks and Forestry Association here in the Black Hills paid for them. That helps with the park, and they run the Visitor Center Bookshop in Wind Cave, and there will be information from those, real information about where they are and where they're traveling to and what kind of habitat they're using, that visitors to the park will be able to go in and see. The Black Hills Parks and Forestry Association will pay for that, will the collars, and will help make that information available to the public, which I think is going to be cool to go in there and see, this is where the bison are using it, and this is where they're collecting. I know I just loved it when they had a lot of mountain lions tagged Game Fish and Parks here in the Black Hills with GPS collars, and you could go out there and they could actually say that there was a lion east of Spearfish moving this way at 10 in the morning, and this is where it was at 4. And that's some of the things you'll be able to do with those bison, and it'll be really add an educational component to the to a stop at the visitor center there and to the bookstore that I think you'll really appreciate. The people that are there will.
Yeah. All about that education as well for people sort of figuring out why this matters in the first place.
Yeah. And, one of the things they have to manage, just as Custer State Park folks do, and just as a manager over at the Badlands do, when we talked last week about opening that new bison range, 22,000 acres in the park that's going to give them more room to roam and to change that range that hadn't had bison on it for more than 140 years. And it just provides a different opportunity for those animals, and it's better for the herd. And it's better for the habitat, you know, so they don't have to collect and bunch up and be hard on one area because they're herd animals. So they can beat up a place if they don't have enough room to wander around.
What kind of measures are they taking in the park to make sure that the Custer herd does not mix with the Wind Cave herd? I mean, how did that sort of oopsie happen, and what do they do to prevent it?
And they've done a lot in terms of cattle guards. You know, you can drive between the parks. I mean, the back road that I take, often go off Highway 79 up Lane Johnny Creek Road to the Buffalo Corrals and Custer Park, and drive a little bit on oil, and then you're back on gravel, and you cross over into Wind Cave. You're just crossing a cattle guard there, and so if that cattle guard doesn't work, things cross it. And they've also done a lot to improve the fences because there were problems with fence there. They tried to keep the border fence, especially between those two parks, secure, but they've done a lot to improve it. And I think the more they came to understand about the special nature of the genetics in that Wind Cave herd, the more care they've used. I think it was the 90s maybe when the research first began to determine and clarify how special the herd is. And, you know, they've really done a lot since then, I think, to try and maintain that and protect it, and also to respect the herd in Custer Park, too. You know, they just want to keep them separate.
Yeah. Have you spent a long time sort of covering this? And, I mean, you spend a lot of time at the roundups in the past?
You know, I've spent a lot of time in Wind Cave in part because Farrell is such an aggressive promoter of the park. He's been there. He told somebody down there that we've been working together 18 years, which is not as long as I've been covering John Cooper, which is 40 years, but it's still quite a while. And he is just so good about, you know, he clearly loves the park and he's steeped in the park, and he's helpful in a way that public information officers need to be helpful in, that he's willing to answer questions that some might not want to answer, just to be, because he understands that honesty really is best policy when you're working with the media and the public. Mm-hmm. And so there have been controversies down there, and he's helpful there. But he also promotes it, so you just can't stay away. So I've been to the roundups when they build new roads. I'm down there when they're doing something with an elevator, because it's such a diverse national park with this wonderful cave and all that it has, and the elk herd and the bison herd and the black-footed ferret management that they do down there. It's really a fascinating place to be and a beautiful place to be. So I can't help but be down there a lot.
I know very little about Wind Cave. So as you say I'm just excited. I've driven through, appreciated its beauty, and that's the extent of my knowledge. So now we have more to talk about, right?
Tom Farrell can help you out in that regard. And you'll love it, really. And a lot of people do miss it. It's kind of a drive-through park for some people, you know. And you can do that and enjoy that. But the more time you spend in it, the more you appreciate it.
Oh, fascinating. So much more about South Dakota to always discover. Just when you think you've got something down, you realize that you really don't. So,
yes, absolutely.
Kevin, you can find Kevin Wooster's blog at sdpb.org/Wooster. And Kevin, thank you so much. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, will do.